Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, third-generation cure masters producing the country's best dry-cured and aged hams, bacon, and sausage. For more information, visit SurreyFarms.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
All right, everybody, welcome to another edition of The Main Course. I'm your host, Patrick Martins. We're broadcasting out of Roberta's Restaurant, 261 Moore Street in Bushwick, Brooklyn, right off the L train, Morgan stop. And it is exciting to be back. Now, once I hit 200, that was always my goal, to be the first host to 200 shows. I've been slowing down a little bit, only coming back for really special people. I'm really excited. We have Frank Langello in today, the executive chef of Babbo Restaurant, the Babbo Restaurant, you know, a real leader, a real movement maker when it opened, and it still continues to astound and keep up the highest levels of quality and respect from people inside and outside the industry. So it's going to be really an honor to talk with him. He's been there for over 10 years, I think. So we'll learn a lot about the secret and the art to that restaurant. Next week, we're going to have an interview with Miriam Burrows, the New York Times food writer. She helped start the Heritage Turkey Project back in 2001. She is all about food safety, and she writes, actually, I think she covers the White House, the first dinner of a new president at the White House, like their first public social function. She's covered the first one of those for all the presidents for the past like 30 years or something. So we'll talk about that with her. And then a lot of interesting guests going to be on. And I'm also really excited about the news division. The editorial staff over in the other office of the radio station are pulling together some really great news pieces, and they're about to send out an exciting press release that talks about their focus and what news stories and what news issues they're going to really focus on. And chicken, I know, is one of them, trying to improve the lives of broiler chickens. Also kind of spotlighting food heroes out there, you know, who are going to lead the food movement for the next 50 years. So a lot of exciting news coming out of the network. We're going to take a brief break and then get right into business with Frank Langello of Babbo Restaurant. Back in studio with Frank Langello, first time ever on The Main Course. Welcome, Frank.
Hi, thank you.
Well, it's an honor to have you on. We've been working together for many, many years.
Many years.
Well, you've been there since 2000.
2000,
huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
14 years.
That's intense. I'll just read a brief bio of you. After graduating from the CIA in 1998, Frank began working at Le Cirque in 2000 and honed his skills in the kitchen there for 2 years. In 2001, or these are probably dates that are a little off, he decided to return to his Italian roots. He set his sights high, determined to work only for the then-up-and-coming chef whom he greatly admired. Frank left Le Cirque in 2000, printed a single copy of his resume, and submitted it to Mario Batali at Babbo. He got the job and has worked under his mentor ever since, and has led the kitchen as executive chef since 2002. Yes. So that is quite the story. So is that true? You printed one copy and you hand-delivered it?
Yeah, that's it. My friend was working there. He said, why don't you come on down? They're looking for a grill guy. And I printed a resume and went down there and trailed on a Saturday night, and within an hour, I wanted to work there.
Who was the chef at the time?
Andy Nusser.
Who went on to
open Casamono, and now is in opened Terry Lodge and Terry Market up in Westport, Connecticut.
So was your they just liked you, and you just talked your way in that first day, or
well,
how did that go?
You know, they were looking for somebody. It was not right away, within a month. You know, I guess I did a good job. They said I got the job, but I would have to wait. And I said, no problem, I'll wait. And wind up 2 months later, I got the job.
So, grill guy, right?
Yes,
so you had worked with meats before?
Yes, at Le Cirque.
Uh-huh. And what's the, you need to know the temperature. You have to be able to look at a piece of meat and know exactly when to pull it, right?
Well, you know, thermometer helps.
Thermometer helps.
It's always better to be safe than sorry.
Right, right, right.
Under, never over, you know.
And so what was it like? You took over in 2002, and you had been there for 3.5 or 3 years almost.
Well, I started in 2000. I was grill guy for about 3 months, and then they moved me to Tournant for about another 3-4 months.
What's the Tournant?
Tournant is you're a swinger. You work when the grill guy's off, you work his station. When the pasta guy's off, you work his station, and so forth. So
like a rover.
Yeah.
Middle linebacker.
Yeah, it's actually a good position because you don't – every day something new, so it's pretty fun. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I was sous chef for about 3 years under Andy, and once he opened Casamono, I took over.
What were one of the greatest challenges for you to figure out, to overcome?
It was hard
to master.
Well, it was hard from going sous chef, working next to line guys, and being their partner and team, and then going to the front of the line where you have to direct them and make sure they're doing their job. It was a rough transition, but
interesting. Well, although its co-owners Mario and Joe have branched out considerably since they opened Babbo, the restaurant remains their cherished center of gravity, and the proof is in the pasta, perfectly cooked.
Yes.
That Frank Bruni wrote that.
Yes.
And he talks about this famous pasta station. Now, you guys make an unusual amount of pastas for a restaurant, right?
Yeah, we about close to 30 different pastas on our menu right now.
And each one is such a low margin of error, right? I mean, timing is so...
Well, 30 seconds too long, it's overcooked. Or 30 seconds too less, it's undercooked. So it's got to be right on the money.
How many boiling stations do you have?
We have 2 tank stations. There's 6 baskets in each station. At any given time, my main pasta cook now, he could do about 17 saute pans at once.
Wow.
With 12 baskets.
So you need good memory too, right?
It's a real mind challenge, and it's very busy. You got to be super focused. You're not looking at tickets. You just have the expediter, which is me, just yelling at you. I need this pasta, tortelloni, orc, love, goose, cheek, and a black. So it's pretty intense.
And you have so many things on the menu. I mean, it's not like they can section off when the diners come in, so you don't get overwhelmed. I mean, some table could order only pastas for the whole meal, right?
Well, there is a full pasta tasting menu, and majority of the people come to have our pastas, so it's very intense. It's up to the expediter to kind of run the timing of the restaurant with the pasta station. So the pasta station basically controls the timing of the whole kitchen.
Interesting.
Because, we cook our spaghetti to order. It takes 6.5 minutes, so when you drop that spaghetti and set your little timer, which he has, the rest of the line knows that they need that striper or that pork chop to come up in 6.5 minutes.
Most kitchens, I would imagine, would be the chop or the steak or something like that.
No.
Here, it's the middle.
It's the pasta.
Creamy, right?
Yeah, it's the pasta. The pasta runs it.
How many total items on the menu on any given day? If you include the contorni and all that.
Close to 100.
100, wow. Yeah, close. That's a lot. You get a lot of choice. You can really get whatever you want there.
Yeah, with the tasting menus and the desserts, it's probably 80, 90.
So I wanted to ask you, you know, to enlighten some of our listeners, since you have so much experience. Who said it? Larry Holmes had this line, hard work, it ain't easy, but it's fair.
Yes.
And to make so many pastas, there's no way you can't be a master or really knocking at the door of mastery at this. So if you could dumb it down for our people at home, I was just going to ask you about some of the simple tricks. So spaghettini with spicy budding chives. Cheese tortelloni. People always wanted it's easy. The kids like it. Is there a trick with it or a mistake people make a lot?
Just overcooking the pasta and maybe under-seasoning the water. The pasta water is key. If it's not seasoned, and when I say seasoned, I mean salty. It should taste like the ocean almost.
Salty. Tastes like the ocean. Yeah. So you have to put a lot of salt in. Is there a measurement, or you just dump a lot in?
It's burnt fingers, you know, taking that spoon and sticking the spoon in the water and burning your tongue out tasting it. So
it has to taste very salty.
It's about a half a box to a box of salt in the tank. But the pasta machine kind of overflows, so you constantly got to add salt to the water.
Oh, interesting. Because it'll just dissipate and it won't have an effect anymore.
Yeah, we go through about 7 boxes, maybe 6 boxes of salt in a day, just on pasta.
And is a person who loves food supposed to use some fancy sea salt for such a thing, or just regular kosher salt?
Kosher salt's fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, not cooking the pasta too long. A ravioli is 3-4 minutes, or just when it's al dente.
Is when you bite it into it that it pops a little, like a hot dog with the crispy outside skin?
Exactly. It still has that little bite to it.
Crack, but al soft. Dente, yes. Al dente. Interesting. So what about the pappardelle bolognese? How do you make a meat sauce that's the same always, or does it change?
No, one thing about Bob, we're very consistent. I mean, I have one guy who's been making the bolognese for about 8 years now, close to 8 years now, and every time he makes it the same way, the same method, the same measurements, everything the same.
What pasta is the hardest one to master as a home chef to get right? Or pasta sauce, or...
Well, I mean, the sauces, the ragus, is, you know, following the recipe and, you know, just make sure you don't burn anything and everything tastes well. It's the actual stuffing and filling of the raviolis that is tricky and, you know, takes time.
Takes time. How many people total would you say are in the kitchen at any one time?
Wow.
You have 3 shifts, right? You have an early a.m. prep, a lunch, and a dinner crew shift, right? So 3 shifts.
The early prep guys, they come in about 4 in the morning, and they work till about noon. There is 4 savory and 1 pastry guy. And then about 7 o'clock, you get the lunch guys coming in, which is my lunch chef, Robert.
7 a.m., huh?
Yeah, sometimes he's there at 6.
What are the first things he's doing? Because lunch isn't still for another 6 hours.
Well, I mean, we only have 1 kitchen. We have no prep kitchen. We have no prep area. It's the kitchen, and that's it. I mean, if you go to Babo and you go back to the bathroom and you look through the kitchen door, that's it. That's all we have. So there is a lot of prep to be done, especially for nighttime. The menu's so, you know, pretty huge. So they come in at 7, and they're doing a lot of prep for an all-day all-day service. And, you know, the restaurant is small, so we don't have stores. So we're getting deliveries every day, 6 days a week. So there's a lot of prepping and, you know, putting away and butchering and stuff.
And then you have an added an added issue that it's a landmark street, right? Yeah. So you have certain regulations. Like, how does that
It's tough.
Your style?
Well, I mean, we would like our deliveries at, you know, like most restaurants at 5, 6, 7 in the morning. But, you know, if they come anywhere before 8 o'clock, I'm talking like 7:58, well, you know, neighbors will be calling. And just, you know, it's a quiet street, so, you know, try to be quiet and respect. And, you know,
you can't turn the fans on? Is the fans a noise issue?
Yeah, that's another. I mean, the buildings, you know, we got a big exhaust system, and, you know, it's on from 7 in the morning till night, so we don't turn it on till 8 o'clock. Absolutely not.
So it is a little bit like a more, not a la minute, because I know what that means, like at the second of, but, I mean, in essence, you don't have the luxury of pre-prepping stuff 10 hours before. I mean,
Every day we get a delivery in that day, we're prepping it and cooking it for that day service. So it's constant turnover, which makes it good for your walk-in. Your walk-in's always clean and everything's new and fresh, and it makes it easy, especially with Babbo, because we are busy pretty much every day. So you know you're going to use 20 pounds of this. We know we're going to use 12 racks of pork chops a week. We know we're going to use 2 cases of Octo a day. So it's kind of easier to plan.
I was going to ask you that. I mean, you must have to just take control over so many orders, so many different vendors, so many different amounts of stuff. I mean,
well, I mean, our
100 things on the menu.
Our purveyors and our vendors, they know us pretty well, and you know, obviously, they like us.
And you're very consistent. Yeah, they love you guys.
We let you know. I mean, no lie. I mean, they love us. I mean, we're consistent. We order from them every day, so they know our system. Mm-hmm. They know that we need this product this way, and the butchers cut it for us whatever way we want and stuff. So they work with us really well.
And then you come. You're on the dinner crew.
Yeah, I come in at nighttime.
The Marines. Those guys are the heavy lifters.
The late nighters.
So tell us about your schedule. I mean, tell us who your right-hand people are and give our listeners like a lens into.
Well, each shift has their main guy. The 4 a.m. guy, I got this guy, Ronaldo, who I said has been making the bolognese and the ragu since probably 8 years now. And then the lunch guy pretty much does all the ordering and, you know, a lot of prep and make sure everything's done and runs the lunch service is Roberto. Robert, he's an ace in the hole, so that's good. And then he's got his guys. You know, we got Gaetano, who's a good guy. And then the nighttime comes in, me and my sous chefs and a bunch of line guys. And
how many is that crew altogether?
At nighttime with me, there's 8
okay.
of us and doing about 260 people.
So. Wow. How many turns is that?
About 3.5.
Three and a half, wow. Yeah. So when's the first people out to come in? 5 o'clock?
Well, the doors don't get unlocked at 5, so at any given night there could be a line outside waiting. So.
And do they pace how people come in, or are you just
obviously the
balls to the wall?
No, the book is very organized and very spaced out for that. But we have 10 tables in the front and 10 bar stools. Six tables and 10 bar stools that are first come, first serve all night long.
I see.
So people come in and wait a half hour for an open table, walk-in table. So it's constant.
It's constant. And so then your guys come in, and then your first tickets will start to come in around 5:15, 5:30 or something like that, and go all the way till?
Till 11:30 is the last table sat at 11:30. So on a Saturday, my guys are there till 12, 1 cooking. And they're a bunch of good guys. I mean, I got 2 sous chefs, James and Isaac and, you know, me. And it's fun.
And now you're going back and forth with just John Maneri, the famous maitre d' there. He's been written about and this and that, but you deal with him numerous times a day. What is being said during those interactions?
Well, you know, with who's eating, was there VIP at what table, what tables does he want me to push, you know, because I could, some tables, you know, might want to eat slow, or some tables he might need back for a big top, or... You know, it's always asking communication, just keeping the lines open. And, you know, if he needs me to rush a table, I'll try to push it out a little bit faster. If he wants me to move a ticket up, you know, a table up to the front of the fire line, I'll move them up to the fire line and just try to get through service, basically.
Now, do you do anything different with VIPs? I mean, other than give them a Prosecco or something like that?
No, I mean, you know, we might give them a Prosecco, maybe, you know, an extra dessert or something. But we treat everybody the same. I mean, everybody comes. Good. It's so busy that it's so hard to treat people different. I mean, we're a consistent restaurant. I mean, it's built for speed. And, you know, you're that busy, you don't have time to really, like, specially style out somebody and give somebody else a lack. Everybody's the same.
For sure. No, that makes a lot of sense. Roberta's is the same way. You can't. It gets crazy. I read Joe's book, Restaurant Man. He's like, the people I hate the most when they come to my restaurant, my friends, because they want free shit.
Yeah. It's hard. It's you know, and we're busy in the kitchen, so to do special stuff, it's not cool.
So then when do you guys head out? I mean, when can you tell us about breakdown. Do you and your top guys leave and then other people come in to break down, or do you guys have to package the food for the next day?
I mean most of the food is sold out by the end of the night. I mean, most restaurants, 9:30, 10:30, you know, you're kind of breaking down your station. These guys here are 10 o'clock, they're filling up ninth pans and getting more stuff out of the walk-in for that next third push. And by the time the third push is over, most of the food is, you know, eaten up or discarded anyway, so fresh the next day.
What's the top two sellers? The single two things, well, or two or three things?
There's one dish that sells, beats everything out all year long. 363 days of the year we're open, so is the octopus. I mean, there's one thing that'll beat it one night a week, maybe, is the mozzarella and tomato salad, but
it's that's the Michael Jordan.
The Babbo Caprese is the only one that'll beat the octopus, and it's only once in a while, but the octopus, any given night, guaranteed, is the top seller.
Interesting. Yeah. And you attribute that to the way you make it?
It's
a legend?
It's a legend, exactly. Yeah. I mean, we cook it the same way, we order the same one, and it's just super tender, super grilled, and it's delicious. So.
And do you have a purveyor that you've always been buying it from? Don't worry, Heritage isn't in the market.
We get it from the market. You know, we have a fish guy that goes to the market every night and picks up our fish and our octopus and stuff like that.
Now that I have this little kid, Max, I'm starting to watch all these nature videos, even though he could care less. He's still too young, but I was watching this thing about octopuses, and they are very intelligent creatures. They actually decorate the outside of the hole they live in. They're the only other animal in the kingdom that does that besides humans. Yeah. And they hunt in packs, I heard.
Yeah, I watched a couple things on octopus. I mean, they're pretty smart.
Yeah, their whole thing is a brain, and then they have nine legs. So, Top Sellers, that is very interesting. Well, we're going to take a brief break, and then we're going to close out the interview with talking a little bit about the history of Babbo and the reputation and where it stands in the pantheon of, you know, groundbreaking things it did. So we will be right back.
Today's music is by Shadowbox on heritageradionetwork.org.
Today's program has been brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons. Edwards Suriano hams are aged to perfection for no less than 400 days and hickory smoked to achieve a deep mahogany color. The Edwards name is well known for its world-class aged and cured meats. Their exclusive curing and aging recipe produces a unique flavor profile that enhances the quality characteristics of Berkshire pork. Optimum amounts of pure white fat marbling contribute to a flavor that's a delicate, perfect balance between sweet and salty. For more information, visit www.surreyfarms.com.
All right, we are back. You're listening to The Main Course. I'm your host, Patrick Martins, broadcasting out of Roberta's. And we are engineered by Evan DeVito. Evan, you're doing a great job in there. Bang up job.
Thanks.
Are you any relation, and I'm really hoping you say yes to this, to Danny DeVito?
Unfortunately not.
Gah! That would have been my ticket. That would have been my ticket to the West Coast. I would have been out of here. So I'm very happy to have Frank in. It's the first chapter. I have this book coming out called The Carnivore's Manifesto, and the first chapter is, there's 50 chapters, but the first one is A is for Apprentice, and it talks about the beauty of repetition. I do the same thing every week. I sell these 200 pigs, you know. It's the same thing every week for 2 years on the same schedule, but there's beauty in that, and the relationships you make with the people you've been working with for the 10 years are special because it has time behind it, and you're a big inspiration in that respect. I mean, you're keeping so many balls going in the same place, and it's kept at a great restaurant. I mean, the consistency of that place is unprecedented, and you're the top guy there. So,
thank you.
Yeah, we respect hard work, you know, and consistency and perfection, striving for perfection. I had Cruz here once, and he's like, making the pasta cacio e pepe. It's the hardest thing. No one can make it like me. And I talked to a guy who used to be the chef at Momofuku, and he's like, ramen, it is so hard.
Yeah.
And I think people don't appreciate how the simplest things, the margarita pizza or simple pasta, are really the greatest forms of art when they're done right. So when you came into Babbo, I mean, it broke a lot of new ground. What made it different than other restaurants like it at its time and today?
We were willing to try different things and, you know, bring in different parts of animals and offals and sweetbreads and tongue and ears and just go all out and see what people ate and liked.
You have music on, right?
Obviously, yeah. I mean, you come in at 10:30, 9 o'clock, and you're getting Led Zeppelin and, you know, Beastie Boys and, you know, Red Hot Chili Peppers, and it's great. It's actually really fun. When you see the music change sometimes at Babbo, and you look around and you see customers' heads just start bobbing, and like people that you won't even think that would be enjoying it just start bobbing their head and grooving to the music while they're eating, it's pretty cool.
No, I'm a big fan of it. I like loud places. When I go to someone's a new city and people are like, come over to my house, I'm like, I love you, but it's too boring. I want to be in a fun, loud place and see people.
Absolutely.
But it also got criticized. Didn't it famously lose a star, or maybe because of
music? You know, we're a 3-star restaurant, and they said in the review that, you know, what kept us from 4 stars probably was the music and maybe the, you know, the not wearing the suit jackets or whatnot. But we don't care. We have fun, and, you know, we cook good food and good product, and
you're very successful.
It. Yeah, and we're still busy, and it's a fun place, so, you know, we don't care.
You guys, you have people come in there
we got guys
once a week, twice a week?
No, we got guys that come 3, 4, maybe 5 times a week to sit at the bar and eat and on a regular. I mean, for years they've been coming in on a regular.
Yeah, and it's possible, you know, Babbo, of course, you know, people, young people be like, oh, it's too expensive. It's really not. You sit at the bar, you get a pasta, and you get a glass of wine, and
It's reasonable all around. Even the wine list is reasonable, and the menu is not expensive at all. It's reasonable for a 3-star quality food. Mm-hmm. New York City restaurant, I mean, you know.
Yeah, and, you definitely have a loyal crew. I mean, I've been there maybe 5 or 10 times in my life, and I've even seen the same people over and over, and there's staff, too, right?
Of course, yeah. We got a lot of guys that's been there for a lot of years.
And, Gina DePalma,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, pastry chef. Yeah, she opened the place.
Wow, so she's even been there, like, a couple of years more than you.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's interesting. Now, they just did a benefit for her recently,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Gina's night at Otto. She's battling cancer and fighting hard and living life.
Hmm. And, that was nice that they did it. And I know, when Hurricane Sandy came, your Staten Island home was destroyed during the storm surge. So they also held a fundraiser for you at Otto. I mean, first of all, I'm so sorry that that happened to you. I can't even imagine losing your home.
It was a crazy night. I was in the attic for 8 hours with 4 dogs and a cat. My wife and kids evacuated. I stayed, you know, make sure things would be okay, like the pumps and the generators, and it wasn't. I was in the attic for 8 hours and wondering how the hell I'm getting out of here. So it worked out, though. The government just recently just purchased the property and, you know, bought us out, and they're going to knock down the whole neighborhood and not build anything there.
Because it's too...
We were the hardest hit in Staten Island. We were the impact zone where I lived. It was a half a block from the beach, and it's right where the inlet comes in. So it's right where the surge wave came in. I mean, it literally knocked my back wall out. I heard it crash while I was in the attic. So, about 16, 17 feet of water.
And the water was coming in strong, right? I mean,
it wasn't powerful. No, in about 20 minutes, the house was full, and it took me about, I don't know, it felt like forever, but it was only about 5 minutes getting 4 dogs, one of them about 110-pound Weinerheimer, up an attic stairs, to the point where I thought I was going to have to swim out and leave the dogs at one point. So it was crazy. I made myself a little escape route through the door and figuring out, like, well, if I got to leave them, I got to leave them, so.
Were you in communication, cell phone with
people
at the time?
Believe it or not, my phone and my computer were fully charged, so, and they were in the attic, and, you know, I was actually, like, talking to my wife, and, you know, and then my brother-in-law, who was a cop, who was, lived 3 doors away, which actually his dog was a Weinerheimer, was at the end of the street trying to get the police to come get us, and they just couldn't get up the block. It was packed, so.
And were there other people like you on your block who had done the same thing?
The whole block. You know, wow. 4 people lost their lives up our block. Wow. You know, 8 hours later, my neighbor's son found a boat and started pulling people out.
Unbelievable. Yeah. It's like the best place to live, but then all of a sudden, every 50 years or 100 years, it's the worst place.
It's a shame. It was a great street. You know, we moved up that block because my wife's sister lives up that block, and she has 2 kids. I have 2 kids, and they would play football on the street. Right there. You didn't go up the block unless you lived there. So there was no reason for to go there. So they would just ride their bikes up and down the street, play football, whatever.
But the government did right by you guys? Government, so where are you going to move to now?
Well, right now we're renting a house in the middle of Staten Island up on a hill, which is actually a steep hill, but, you know, water goes downhill, which we were looking for. But we're not sure yet. We're keeping our options open. You know, we don't want to rush into it, make a, you know, split decision. We want to see what life's, you know, going to pan out in the next year or so.
Are you going to tempt fate with another flood like that?
No, the next time somebody says evacuate, I'm out.
You're out.
See ya.
But, I mean, there must have been a lot of loss of personal belongings.
Everything. Yeah. I lost everything I had since I was a kid. Mm-hmm. The only thing I left with was my computer and my wallet. And, you know, I had my wife's yoga pants on and I had my son's clothes on my arms. You know, and I feel, you know, my son's 7 and, you know, he lost a lot. And, you know, my wife lost a lot of her pictures and stuff. It's just stuff you lose that's memorabilia, you know, when you were a kid that you were saving to show people. But,
no,
you know,
it's the fabric of a life. Yeah. I mean, it's very sad.
Yeah. Well, you
baseball mitts and
everything.
Yeah, wedding photos, albums. Yeah. No, it's very, very sad. Yeah.
But, you know, it's I got out safe. You know, I'm healthy. My wife's healthy. The kids are good. So, you know, you can't look back on materialistic stuff. But it's when you go look for that one thing you always had and you don't find it. So.
Yeah. Well. Yeah, now I feel a lot less angry that I lost one of my Vectrex tapes. As long as I still have my Vectrex. Now Mario and Joe, they were nice. They did a benefit, and that's great that they put their time and energy.
Yeah, it was really helpful at that point because I didn't know where I was going to stand with the house. You know, I still owed a mortgage on it, and the mortgage company was harassing me, and you know, they didn't care about the flood; they just wanted their money and. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't know where I was going to stand financially, and you know, Mario and Joe stepped in and it gave me a little blanket to rest on, and you know, get things organized until the government actually, like, you know, really stepped up and said, "We're going to buy you guys out. Relax." And they actually did, and it was in record time, within a year of the storm. So it was really, you know, now it's, you know, building our life back, so it's cool.
Well, it is. There's always the learned when I was in college, tarot cards, and the tower destroying and collapsing is actually a good card in many ways because it brings you together with people in ways that you might not have seen under such strife, and it's the only good you can take out of it because in the end it sucks.
Yeah, it definitely changed the way I look at life. It actually even changed the way I work at the restaurant. I mean,
how's that?
I actually enjoy it more. I have more fun. I don't let things stress me out as much anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just to enjoy it, you know, because I could have not enjoyed it anymore if things went wrong. So you look at it and you appreciate it more. So it's definitely a little bit more fun and, you know, going with it.
Well, it's been a great interview. I mean, I didn't even ask about this because I wanted to ask you all these questions. But let's talk real quick. Briefly, just to end the segment, about Mario and Joe and what you've learned from them. Joe a little bit, but mostly Mario in the kitchen.
First with Joe, you learn how to run a business and how to, like, succeed and make things right. And with Mario, it's just everything you need to know, he knows. I mean, just the style of food and how to make delicious things taste good and taste like they are supposed to be, and you know, and live life and be a family man and a chef and all around, you know, good guy, and try to, like, you know, make better for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in the cooking, I mean, everything I learned from.
What did you learn? What did he teach you about spices or combinations?
Well, I mean, Mario definitely likes spicy food, so you know, things taste the way they look. I mean, you want a pork to taste like the pork and not you know, anything else, or the vegetable to taste like the vegetable it is, and less is best, and, you know, a lot of acidity and good flavor.
Mm. Yeah. Well, very interesting. I hope you come back 100 times. Oh, I mean, yeah. We could have talked hours about anything on the menu and other things that you do, and had all these questions about scheduling and timing and how you manage different people, but that'll be for a future interview. In the meantime, thanks so much for coming in. I know how busy you are.
I would love it. Can't wait till next time.
Thanks to our listeners for listening, and stay tuned for the next show. And I'll be back next week with Marian Burroughs from the New York Times.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.